Look through the window of the original Joe's on North Beach and you'll see two guys at the counter talking ball. Time for you to listen in to their conversation. Marty Lurie and the SF Chronicles' Bruce Jenkins are looking through the window of baseball. Sponsored by Original Joe's of North Beach and Westlake on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, good morning, everybody, and it's time to do our Giants pregame here. We talked to Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Bruce, thank you for being on so early. How are you?
Okay, Marty, had a little coffee, not too bad.
Very good. Yeah, for me, the wake-up call was about 4:30 this morning.
Oh, my. So
you know what I thought of? I swear, I thought of the players in the PCL. Because those guys, right, don't they take like the 6 a.m. flights into the next city and that kind of stuff? So they have a crazy schedule.
Yeah, yeah. So they don't have to spend an extra night in the hotel. And, you know,
right.
Yeah, it's such a different life in the minors. You know, you see guys come up to the big leagues, they can't believe how well they treated, and they really don't want to go back.
But, no, yeah. It's amazing. Well, I had Kerry Crowley on early this morning. And I said, well, how are you getting up to New York? Because they're in Baltimore. He says he's taking the train.
Oh, absolutely. I also took the train up in the Eastern Seaboard. Maybe not Boston, but between, you know, New York and Philly and Washington, Baltimore. Boy, it's just the only way to go, downtown to downtown.
Now, did you ever do it with the team on the train as well? Because, of course, the Giants are taking the train from Baltimore to New York tonight.
Yeah, I can only remember one time. But, yeah, that was kind of fun, too. Like the old days when the writers were taking, riding along with Babe Ruth and playing cards and traveling across the Midwest.
It was a crazy incident in the 40s. I forget the fellow's name, but he was sort of like, he would do like Max Patkin stuff before the game for the Cleveland Indians, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he was on the train. And, of course, in those days, the players were separate from the commuters, but sometimes they would intermingle. So this guy goes into the commuter part of the train, and he's got some fake snakes, and lets us, and just caused a tremendous commotion on the train, and then they had to stop the train. He was fired, and it was the Cleveland Indians in the 40s. I mean, that was baseball back then. People just had fun.
Yeah,
what can I tell you?
Maybe not the image you want for a decade, but. They did get pretty good by the late 40s.
Yeah,
by 48 they were rolling.
That was the train story I always remember, is that one with the snakes. All right. St. Louis last night, they played the Cubs, and I'm watching the score. It's 2-2, 2-2, rain delay, and the whole Dodger game is over, rain delay. The rain delay was 3 hours, 37 minutes, and then they finished the game, which was a 3-hour game. How about that?
Yeah, that's crazy. That reminded me of a night in Philadelphia way back sometime in the 80s, the Giants-Phillies game. They had a rain delay of well over 3 hours, and I remember we watched an entire game from Anaheim in the press box during this rain delay. And that was a long game that went extra innings, and all of a sudden now we're resuming. Carlton had a no-hitter, and they were going to finish this game, and the Giants broke up the no-hitter like way after midnight, and I remember Len Schwartz and I left the press box at 10 minutes after 3.
Yeah, I don't get it, why they don't deal with it. You know, we talked about the netting yesterday and the change of the world and how you treat patrons and all that. Don't they have to do – but I just can't believe they don't do something about these rain delays.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. It's in a way, you can't win. You want to get it in so bad, then you wind up playing in front of nobody, and almost doesn't feel like it counts at some point.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was my thought on that one. I said 3 hours 37 minutes. I could just imagine if I was on the air that night, I would have to cover 3 hours 37 minutes of every 15 minutes going back to the stadium, and then do the post game show afterwards. I'd say, all right.
A true test of your storytelling ability.
Boy, that would be, let me tell you. Those days are done. I'm done with that. The other thing I thought of, are you into the draft at all? Do you get excited?
Absolutely.
About the-
Absolutely. I do a little bit of homework, not too much. I think Henry's actually going to be there, and we got Warriors going on. But on draft night, I love it. I like it as more than the other drafts in a way. I mean, you don't get a big long look at these guys, but you do get some video clips. You can see guys, their swing path, and guys throwing breaking balls. It's, you know, I can remember seeing Bumgarner, just clips of the guy, and thinking, gee, that looks kind of promising. And, it, you know, the College World Series allows you to see guys who just were drafted. When Florida State had Posey, the Giants had just drafted him, and I'm watching every inning of that guy's playing now. So that's just kind of an extra bonus to it. But, yeah, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I guess the big controversy, taking a high school player versus a college player these days, you know, how close you are to being a contender. Do you want to invest 5 years in the high school player? I guess that's the big issue still.
Yeah, it's always a pretty good argument. I've always felt the college player is a little bit safer bet, especially if has played at a you know, big time level, NCAA tournament or wherever it might be. Just a little more maturity and a little more idea of how he performs against, you know, against real competition, because you see some great pitching. Every year you go up against Vanderbilt, you're going to see somebody who's in the bigs, you know. And in high school, you just really don't know. But then, you know, there's some guys who you see in high school, and they're so advanced and they're so good, it's just no doubt about it. But I like the college pick for a number of reasons.
Yeah, Bobby Witt's kid is in this. You covered Bobby Witt. What do you think of him? He's a good fastball.
Oh,
remember?
Man, he had a howling fastball. He didn't have great control, but he was really nasty. Real tough at bat for a right-hand hitter, stand in against that guy.
Didn't he almost have a perfect game, and did they blow the call at first? Something that would Greg Gagne, remember?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean,
Minnesota?
Every time he went out there, he could have threw a two-hitter at you, but yeah. Some before replay, you know?
Yeah, I think Gagne bunted. Something happened. I forget with Bobby Witt, but he had a perfect game at that point. But his kid, they say he's five tools, shortstop, and could go number one, or possibly is locked in at number two at Kansas City. Then I know we touched on this yesterday. The Cal kid is supposed to be third. And I'm told by the scouts the Cal kid could walk into the big leagues tomorrow and play.
Well, he's a hell of a hitter, Vaughn. You know, he's got a lot of power. He's got power numbers, but he goes up there, you know, thinking he's more of a situational hitter. He goes to the opposite field completely naturally and effectively, and he just does what you need. It's interesting watching and reading some of the lead up to this. You know, he's a right-hand hitting first baseman, and he's not very tall. He's about 6 feet. And there's not a lot of profile for that over the years. You're looking for like a left-hand hitter who's like 6'3", you know, or he doesn't fit the profile. But I think Jeff Bagwell didn't really either. So we'll see. But I'm anxious to see how he goes. You know, I went to Cal and covered a lot of Cal baseball there, and it's pretty cool. I think the White Sox are zeroing in on him pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah. Those would be the top three, catcher from Oregon State. Yeah, so that'll be fun. I know we touched on it yesterday, but I think for the Giants in the rebuild, and you must understand fans and everybody, it is a rebuild. I don't care what words you want to put on this. They have to get rid of everybody and get a whole new team out there. That's just got to happen. And they're going to get a pick number 10, and I hope they take the outfielder. There's a shortstop available. The left-handed hitting outfielder may be there at 10, and if he is, Sarah High School, Arizona State, that's the guy I want.
Yeah. That's a good combo right there, Sarah and Arizona State.
Right. Well, someone else did that, didn't they?
That's Barry Bonds.
Yeah. Well, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
The other thing about the draft, which Scott Boras is always in the middle of something, and he goes back to Ben McDonald in 1989, 30 years ago, last time the Orioles had that pick. We touched on that yesterday. He's got a kid, Carter Stewart, who was in the draft last year. The Braves didn't sign him for some medical reasons. So he took Carter Stewart to Japan, and as he got a $7 million guaranteed deal, and he'll be there till he's 25 or 26. He went over there last week to take a look at Japan. He says, yeah, it seems okay to me, and he's going to be there. And then at that age, if he's made it, he'll come back to the big leagues, but he'll make more money in Japan than he ever would have made in the U.S. So how about that for taking a high school kid to Japan?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend going to Japan and immerse yourself in the culture a little bit, especially the baseball culture, before making that kind of commitment. I mean, you know, a lot of guys have gone over there and totally succeeded and become heroes, and a lot of others have just completely disappeared, and they just didn't like the whole, you know, social climate of the whole thing, as far as an American playing in Japan, it wasn't cutting it. And I don't know, it's it's I don't think it's going to start a big trend. Let's put it that way.
No, but I'll tell you one thing: if teams, you know, get tough with players or whatever, players drop in the draft, you know, why not? Why not? I guess if you could sign like a 3-year deal or 4-year deal, maybe it's financially not lucrative enough. But if you were 18 and you could be in Japan till you're 22 and then be a free agent, why not? If that could work.
Yeah, and you know, then you're going to be, ideally, you're fully developed when you get to the bigs. I mean, if you just stay here, you probably wouldn't get to the bigs until you're 22 anyway, unless you're just sensational.
And you're making $800 a month
along the way. Yeah. It's like I was saying, this is going to start a big trend.
Yeah. I can see it. I'm telling you. Boris figures this stuff out. He does.
Yeah, he does. I'm sure he won't be alone. It's just kind of, it's an interesting call to completely leave the country and you know, drop off the map, really, in a lot of ways. And they have a lot of confidence in yourself, though.
Yeah, I like it. All right, Mac Williamson, he is elected free agency, and Kerry Crowley was on this morning early with us. And we talked about a couple of places for him. One would be Camden Yards. I mean, you know, you're 350. Posey had a home run, 359 yesterday. I mean, going to Korea or Japan and playing over there, which is sort of the equivalent of AAA. And the guy crushes AAA, maybe that's a spot for him.
Yeah, I can see him thriving there. I mean, he's such a long ball hitter. I mean, we haven't seen enough evidence of his power, but we've seen enough that it's really formidable. He could be quite a big star over there if he hits a lot of homers and can play the outfield and just more than anything just get comfortable. You know, he's very rarely felt like, okay, you know, here I am. Just when it seemed like it was going good, he got the concussion. He never did show much. He looked kind of lost at the plate this year, and you feel for the guy, but he's young, and you know, he's just got to clear a few things up in his head and in his game. But yeah, we'll be following him. It's interesting to follow a guy like that, see where he winds up and how he's doing.
Yeah, because he's got power. There's no doubt he's got power.
Oh yeah.
So you put him maybe over there, and he's an Eric Thames, you know, that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, Cecil Fielder went over in the late 80s, came back, and had a tremendous major league career after that. So sometimes you learn how to hit.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for some of the guys who went over there, they absolutely loved everything about it.
Yeah.
You know, they made the sacrifices that you have to make in terms of the practicing, and you just, you know, you humble yourself in front of your teammates, and you don't make a big show of it and things like that. But they just liked everything, the transportation, the city, the people, the food, and you know how well they were treated. And so yeah, I could stick with this for my whole life.
Yeah, no, seriously. And Alonzo Powell did it, the Giants hitting coach. We had, let's see, Ken Maka.
Bobby Valentine went over there, and really.
Yeah, Bobby Valentine did it.
Deeply into the culture.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I thought about that for Mac, because we probably won't hear much about him in the near future unless he hooks on with the Orioles. I was thinking about this today. We played one of the greatest games in Giants history. It was from the 60s, and the home runs are flying all over the place, you know, the power of the Giants. And then the guy in the game was Jesus Alou, went 6-for-6.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he ended up playing for the A's.
Who didn't?
Well, here's my point. Charlie Finley, and I know we got Hall of Fame stuff coming up in July. Charlie Finley, should he get some consideration for the Hall of Fame, Bruce? I mean, we know the good and the bad, Kansas City, what he did there and everything, but in Oakland. But isn't this guy an innovator? Didn't he actually, his own general manager, didn't he put together amazing teams?
Oh, he absolutely did. I think the way that he tore them apart just so ruthlessly and, you know, without a care for anything, no regard for human life, as Kevin Harlan says, it was so bad for baseball.
Okay.
You know, I remember being at the Coliseum when I think Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers showed up. They'd been traded earlier in the day, and all of a sudden they got Boston uniforms on.
You know? I know. June 15th.
Yeah. There you go. You remember the exact date. I mean, yeah. And, you know, he ran an operation with like two other people in the entire organization.
At one point,
or so it seemed. and just, you know, went on the cheap and did a lot of things that just didn't represent Major League Baseball as a class, you know, okay, product. So, I mean, because of that, I just remember talking to him on the phone a lot. I would work in the Chronicle desk. Ron Bergman, the great Ron Bergman, was covering for the Oakland Tribune, and he was the only guy traveling. He had all the stories and all the wacky Finley stuff, and we'd have to catch up, you know, the next day or that night. And I was the guy who called Finley, and he was all, oh, God, I'll tell you. He was completely in the bag just every night.
That's great.
I'm thinking, this guy's a lunatic. And he was a lovable, weird, rich, cheap lunatic. I don't know if that's Hall of Fame, but
no, probably not.
He's remembered. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, night World Series games, the colorful uniforms, and he did put together a dynasty of players. But maybe they won despite him. I guess maybe that's the way to put it.
Well, as it was happening, that's pretty much how they felt, because they're all trying to get more money and they're not getting it, and this and that. But they rallied as few teams ever have, you know, as a sort of band of brothers kind of thing against whatever was thrown at them. Boy, that you talk about dynasties. They're talking about with the Warriors now. You know, that A's dynasty is maybe a little bit forgotten over the years, but it was really something to see.
Yeah. All right, you convinced me. I'm not voting for him. That's it. I'm done with Charlie Finley. All right. Hey, have a great Sunday. I know you got a big day today and the Warriors tonight. What's your prediction on tonight?
I think the Warriors get one tonight. Okay. You know, you don't really know why. I almost, whatever happened in the last game, you look for a big reversal in a lot of different ways. I think we're going to see a different Klay Thompson, different Draymond Green, a little more energy on the Warriors' part. And the Toronto really played out of their mind. So I think it ties up 1-1 after tonight.
All right. I love the crowds. I love it. What they're
fantastic.
Walking into. Yeah, it's great. Hey, have a great Sunday. I hope the rehab's going well. And that's the Dodgers next weekend. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet. Thanks, Marty.
All right. Take care. All right, time now to select today's Hit of the Week, sponsored by Chilton Auto Body, the Bay Area leader in collision repair. And the kid, Mike Yastrzemski, why not? How about the home run?
First ball swinging. Yastrzemski, it's a high drive deep to right center. Way back there. Adios, pelota! Mike Yastrzemski, on the first pitch of the second inning, has hit a home run to tie this game. His first major league home run in the ballpark of the team that signed him and brought him up to the minor leagues for 7 years. So what a thrill for Yastrzemski, and it is 6-6.
I love it. Great call by John on that. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680, the sports leader.